Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, I'm pleased to announce that the world did not end. You probably already know that. But there are lots of shiny things to distract. You have North Korean dictators, you have American presidential tweeters, and kneeling football players. And in the meantime, storm clouds are beginning to gather over the markets and the world economy, and nobody really is looking or talking about it. So in podcast 665, is the longest bull market in U.S. history about to end? There's something new and fun to do these days, whether it is a date night, business client appreciation event, a corporate team building event, something with your family, or a friend's night out. It's at Brush Studio West End in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Now, I can tell you that an artist will guide you through making and creating a painting. And I can tell you that you'll come away with a real painting, something you can hang on your walls at home or at work, something you and your friends and your coworkers or your family would be really proud of. But the other night, I actually went over to Brush Studio, and it's actually better if I take you inside a Brush Studio event a little bit, and you can kind of hear the reaction and what people do. So let's go on into Brush Studio.
Do you mind if I ask you some questions?
Sure.
You guys having fun?
Yes.
Yeah, tons of fun.
What are you painting?
We're painting birch trees. In the nighttime with a little cardinal.
We're trying.
So they give you paint, right?
Yeah, and you just follow the people at the front.
The person at the front.
And then you just follow their breaks and everything. And yeah, I don't know.
It's really fun.
Different thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, on a Friday night.
And a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're having a good time. We got the whole family here.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
So
I got my wife and our two sons and their fiance and one's girlfriend.
I didn't even know I could.
This is one, probably the most fun you can have at a job. Seriously. My favorite part is when people just completely go off the rails and do something that I would never think of or other people wouldn't think of, but they came here with like an intention. It's a thing to do on a Friday night that isn't watching TV, isn't going to a movie. You're being social with a group. You get a little wine or something, but it's not like that's all you're at, like at a bar, that's all you're there to do. You know, I've been teaching for 22 years.
Oh, okay.
I make all kinds of stuff on my own.
You look like an artist. You have
what?
Fun?
Oh,
you
absolutely.
You look like an artist.
I just found my inner artist.
Your inner artist.
Yeah.
Brush Studio in the West End, St. Louis Park. 22 brands of beer, an extensive wine collection, catering from Crave in the West End. You're going to have a good time because they are event planning ninjas at Brush. Date night, client appreciation, corporate team building, family, friends. They'll all be great. Sign up online at Brush Studio in the West End, St. Louis Park at brushstudio.net. Brushstudio.net, or you can reach out to Brush at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Brush Studio. Oh, by the way, there's plenty of parking in the West End, St. Louis Park. Now, maybe you do something completely different for fun, like ride your motorcycle. And I just saw a thing that says we're going to probably have pretty good weather all the way through to October, so people will still be riding. And if you ride, I want to tell you about this company I'm working with, the great motorcycle products and accessories company, Ciro3D. That's C-I-R-O-3-D, Ciro3D.com. They make great products and accessories for your bike, especially lighting options and solutions. And, you know, really affordable things like device mounts. So maybe you like to take your GoPro with you when you ride, or maybe you have been struggling trying to find a good mount for your phone. Things like that they make, and they're really affordable, and they're really cool. They work really well. I have two of those cell phone mounts in my mobile podcast command unit, and they are fabulous. So check out Ciro3D, Ciro3D.com, C-I-R-O, Ciro3D.com, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Well, I've often said it almost everything that we see and hear these days are distractions, small talk. And I'm certainly not going to use the term fake news. I started using the term fake news before anybody, and so I am entitled to retire its use because it doesn't describe what is actually happening with media and in the world. Now, what they're reporting is real enough. War of words between a North Korean dictator with a hydrogen bomb and a U.S. president with a gift for bombast. A group of football players trying to make a statement by kneeling before games during the national anthem. And this has produced angry responses and tweets from the president. And honestly, I don't care to tell you the truth because I've always looked beyond these kinds of what I consider to be small stories to see what is beyond. In the end, the North Korean brinkmanship is either going to end in some sort of anticlimactic settlement or a war. And regardless of what happens, we will deal with it when it happens. I'm not going to, do podcasts trying to predict the future about what's going to happen or not going to happen because I think that's a waste of everyone's time. And I'm certainly not going to do podcasts about the NFL and people kneeling and all this other stuff, even though this is what everyone's talking about. So here's where I start to cut across the grain. I'm certainly not going to pay lip service to a silly argument such as the NFL thing between the president and the players the management of NFL and whether or not people should be required to take an oath of fealty, whether in the form of, singing the national anthem or whatever, which, by the way, we didn't require oaths of fealty at the outset of this country. For all the talk on the right about the founders, we didn't say the Pledge of Allegiance, and those kinds of oaths were frowned upon by the founders. A lot of people don't realize that. But what's going on in the world of the markets and the economy is of interest, because while Washington diddles and dawdles on doing much of anything about economic issues, and that includes the president, a thunderhead continues to roll across the plains. And you've seen these kinds of thunderheads from a distance, especially when you get out to South Dakota and Nebraska. They just seem to sit there and you're not sure which way they're moving. You're not sure whether they're going to come rolling in or just dissipate. So we have not had a financial crisis in the United States, a real financial crisis that occupies everyone's attention, since 2008. There have certainly been market ups and downs, and there have certainly been financial stories and concerns, but we haven't had anything like what happened in 2008. And we all remember what happened then. The subprime mortgage thing turned into a crisis. Whatever the reason that it happened, which has also become a political football, so to speak, the result was a stock market crash that threatened the banking system, supposedly, and the administration and Congress reacted. And you had big car companies and banks and insurance companies bailed out. You had a massive effort to liquefy the banking system. And the shock of the crisis changed American politics. As a result, it was an election year, and a new administration and a new congressional majority took office. And then they enacted new banking regulations that went into effect. They passed a massive federal spending program to the tune of nearly $2 trillion. And the United States Central Bank began a program known as quantitative easing. Over the next 9 years, quantitative easing would mean adding trillions to the Federal Reserve balance sheet through the purchase of securities and lending at reduced rates. QE 1, 2, 3, and 4 were followed by similar programs from the rest of the world's central banks. And in some cases, as with the Bank of Japan, central banks actually bought stocks. Billions of dollars worth of stocks, or billions of dollars in terms of yen, billions of yen worth of stocks in the Japanese case. Now, the U.S. Federal Reserve is prevented by regulations from buying stocks outright, so the U.S. Central Bank supported the stock market indirectly through various means known as quantitative easing. They bought securities. They bought treasury bills. They bought mortgage-backed securities from banks. They lended at reduced rates and so on. But foreign banks aren't prevented from doing this, and they are buying stocks. And now the Federal Reserve in the United States is reported to have decided that it must begin to unwind its nearly $4 trillion balance sheet of these various securities, including hundreds of billions of dollars, as I said, in mortgage-backed securities purchased over the years. Now, I am not a Fed expert. I'm certainly not a market expert, but I assembled a number of these stories this weekend because they caught my eye, because I'm not going to read about Kaepernick, and I'm not going to read about another story or get upset about another story about North Korea. The only reason that I bring this stuff up is because I am posing the question, with the Fed buying securities, and while this has certainly helped to cause a boom in Treasury bonds and the U.S. dollars, the U.S. stock market has now had a 10-year boom known as the bull market. And I bring it up and I ask this question because the stock market is the bellwether by which most of us judge the performance of the economy in the United States. So if the Fed tightens money supply by fully reversing quantitative easing programs and raising interest rates, and they do it too quickly or too much, it places the stock market in a precarious position. So it's time to ask the question, are we headed for a bear market, and are we headed for a precipitous drop and a dangerous drop in the stock market and all of the effects this might have on the economic situation and the political economy in the United States? Well, it's definitely in the news these days. Lots of talk about foreign manufacturing with Trump. Some companies are preparing to bring some of their manufacturing back to the U.S. If your company is considering American manufacturing, and there are great reasons to manufacture in the United States, remember DepoStar, American Design Engineering and Manufacturing. You can visit DepoStar at DepoStar.com or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Now, eventually, the weather will turn, and even though we're supposed to have a warm October and a warm end of September, don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul when it comes to home or business to keep all of your systems running right, and I'm talking about heat right now. So what you want is you want Ryan Plumbing and Heating to check your heating to make sure it is up and running and to fix anything that is wrong, because when something goes wrong with these systems, you want reliable service. That means Ryan Plumbing and Heating. They're in St. Paul, 651-224-4771, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, online at ryanplumbing.com. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. Check them out online, residential and business, ryanplumbing.com. So a lot of people, as they listen to a podcast like this, might say, I don't know what you're talking about. Everything's going great. I don't know. I don't understand any of this stuff, and I don't care about any of this stuff because I'm a businessman, you know, and I have to think about my business, or I work for the state, or I work for this company, and I don't understand any of this stuff, and I just can't figure it out, so I don't want to. Regardless of that, I think it's fair to say that basically we're all looking the other way right now. You know, we're looking at North Korea, as I said. We're talking about the NFL, as I said. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with looking at those things or talking about those things. You know, even if it's the president's latest tweet or what I would refer to as the latest PR stunt that he's pulled. And of course, fun things like predicting the end of the world and so forth. And I did a podcast about that. But I posed a question in the last podcast of whether people seeing this quote-unquote end of the world are subconsciously or unconsciously seeing something else they can't describe. And I'm assuming that they're earnest about their descriptions on YouTube, and other people are concerned about, you know, the tribulation or the end of the world. And I'm not going to go too far into that stuff. But are they perhaps seeing a collapse in world markets that's historic, right? That's one of the things. And I, you know, these things, the madness of crowds, these kinds of things are generally, you know, not perceived by the masses as they happen. And I remember very clearly I guess it was the summer and fall of 2008, you know, people insisted that there was no problem and, you know, no one believed that the markets would crash and on and on, and then they did. And, you know, there's been a lot of arguments about the reaction to that by both the Bush administration and the Obama administration, but it's undeniable that it happened. So The question is whether or not the economic fallout, the potential of economic fallout from some kind of collapse would have a significant effect on the political situation and the economic situation in the rest of the world. So, you know, what I'm trying to do is just give you a heads up. And maybe nothing will happen and maybe everything will be smooth and we have nothing to worry about and it's all good. Or maybe not. But, you know, at least I'm giving you a heads up and talking about something that actually has some significance. So what specifically am I talking about? Well, first of all, the Federal Reserve has already telegraphed its intention to stop easing, to stop this quantitative easing program that basically was the injection of an enormous amount of money, something like $4 trillion over the last few years, to keep the economy from falling apart completely, to keep the banking system from seizing up. And this was why they were said to have done it. This is why Henry Paulson told, you know, the banks that they had to take the bailout. And this is why companies were given the bailout, because they were concerned that the entire system would collapse. You know, is that a fair concern? Well, that's, you could do 10 podcasts about that. And people have, and they've discussed it ad infinitum for the last 10 years, if you've been paying attention to this. But it meant increasing interest rates and reducing and withdrawing stimulative efforts. The latest effort by the Federal Reserve to telegraph a future move means ending the programs that have been put in place after 2008 to, quote unquote, save the economy. The real question is whether the economy is healthy or whether it has been and remains brain dead, a terminal patient on Federal Reserve life support for the past 8 years. So let's look at it real quick, because whenever I go out with friends of a certain political persuasion, they will tout, you know, Trump's already fixed the economy. Look at all these wonderful things that are happening. And this is not an effort to attack Trump or to defend Trump, but we have had roughly 1.5% economic growth per year since 2008. And it spikes every now and then. Certainly a lot has been made recently of the issuance of a report, which was a revision of the initial GDP numbers for, I believe, the first or second quarter of the U.S. economy, showing 3% GDP growth. As you know, GDP numbers are revised at least three times, and they may yet be revised again as new data comes in on the GDP numbers. It showed, as I said, a 1.5% before. They revised it to 3. But there have been green shoots and surprises and spikes throughout the Obama administration over the last 8 years. I would ask, what systemic institutional changes have been made to the U.S. economy? Well, there was a banking regulatory bill passed called Dodd-Frank during the Obama administration. There was a stimulus bill passed during the Obama administration. There was a change in the calculation of unemployment to include part-time workers during the Obama administration, which reduced the overall accepted number in terms of unemployment. But unemployment has remained elevated if you look at the other categories. There have been successive budget bills that have been proposed that increase federal spending up to and including the first official Trump budget, which has been, you know, the subject of a lot of incorrect media coverage that's been biased one way or the other, because it only reduced the rate of increase for specific departments and increased spending for others. And of course, Congress added yet more spending to that budget guideline. So it's important to point out that the budget that Trump gave to Congress, which is really only a guideline, Congress is the party in our government that actually decides about spending. They're the ones that initiate the spending bills, and they're the ones. So this nonsense about the president's budget is really, he just sends a budget over that gives them a guide of what he wants. After that, it's up to the president to get what he wants passed. You don't just say, here's my budget, vote up or no, yay or nay on it. That's not how it works. Congress initiates the spending, and of course, then the Senate and the House vote on it. But it's important to point out that they only reduce. So what was reported as cuts are really just cuts in the growth of spending. The budget continues to grow and the spending increases. There was a tax bill back there at some point that reduced the level of taxation for the middle class to actually historically low rates. People think middle class taxes are high. They're historically low, which make further middle class tax cuts, you know, difficult because they are not historically high as they were during, you know, that period in the 1980s. The point here is there have really been no systemic changes made to the U.S. economy. We've certainly had a couple of bank regulatory changes, which are not that significant. We have the Federal Reserve still that was appointed by President Obama, and I think we'll see if there's going to be a change after Janet Yellen's term ends. We have the economic policy, in effect, voted in by Democrat majorities because nothing of consequence really has been done by successive Congresses, which were Republican majorities. So they either were voting against the president when it was a Democrat, or now they seem to be, you know, just embroiled in whatever it is they're embroiled in. And the president is embroiled in whatever he's embroiled in. I'm not quite sure what the preferred economic policy of President Trump is. I hesitate to remind people that he's asking for more spending for hurricane relief and, of course, a stimulus package of some kind, which really is not a, you know, a conservative, if you'll pardon the term, idea when it comes to economics. And yet people persist in pointing to the stock market and saying what a good job the new president is doing, as I mentioned, the Trump bump and all. And what I think people are missing is that the market's expansion might be due in large part to monetary policy. That is what the Federal Reserve does. Remember Alan Greenspan's put after 9/11, which essentially means injecting money into the markets. And when the so-called punch bowl is taken from the party, meaning when the Fed has to tighten to adjust its balance sheet, no matter how quietly, there will be consequences. And what is the Fed? It is the bank of last resort. So it is a bank, but it is really a private-public partnership with a board which is appointed by the president and approved by the Congress, I think the Senate. And so what you're talking about is the Bank of the United States, right? And, you know, it certainly isn't, you know, a government-owned institution, but they have a balance sheet and they loan out money and they have a huge impact on the economy by injecting money into the banking system. That's what the Federal Reserve does. And that is why paying attention to the nuts and bolts of the president's proposals is important. How much will the federal government spend on hurricane relief? Because aside from the bank of last resort, which is the Federal Reserve, the other gigantic really the largest institution that has anything to do with finance in the United States is, of course, Congress. So if Congress decides to spend more money, which they already have, with the debt at $20 trillion and it's over 100% of the GDP, what does all that mean? And will a supposed tax reform bill actually reduce taxes? And will it actually cause even more debt? What about the Obamacare mandates and subsidies, which actually function as a tax increase that they have not repealed? So if Congress doesn't actually repeal these, and even the latest repeal effort, which is dead on arrival, doesn't actually repeal the mandates, what impact will this have on economic growth? What if a new tax bill reduces corporate taxes only 10% rather than the promised near 20, from 35 to, let's say, 25, instead of from 35 to 15? What if they do prevent businesses from itemizing their deductions? How are these tax reductions when there are new taxes associated with these so-called reductions, right? Those are some really important questions, and I'm ticking through them all very quickly, but they're really key. And then what about the predictions of economic growth taking care of already dangerously high deficits when we really haven't made any systemic changes in the way that we regulate, in the way that we run the economy in the United States, in the sense that we are freeing up businesses to do what they do to grow the economy? So the Secretary of Treasury, Steve Mnuchin, is saying things like, well, you know, we're going to have economic growth and it's going to take care of greater deficits because of tax cuts, which is supposed to be supply-side economics. But without detouring too much in this conversation, supply side economics call for drastic spending cuts and tax reductions and repeating that process until the economy is freed. So spending more and having higher deficits and cutting taxes isn't supply side economics. It's actually very much Keynesian economics, which calls for deficit spending to stimulate the economy. It's important for people to understand that. And then finally, what happens if the markets experience a catastrophic corrections just as millions of baby boomers are retiring? So suddenly Uncle Joe and Aunt Lou will have no more time to pay in and they'll have to take the losses. And they thought they had $300,000 in their 401k and now they only have $150,000 or $120,000. So it makes a big difference in terms of the quote unquote wealth effect. And it makes a big difference literally in terms of what people can do and they can't do. So that means Uncle Joe and Aunt Sue aren't going to be buying the RV. Right? So while you're arguing over the back fence, which we all do, and it's certainly all right about whether Kaepernick should never play again or waxing poetic about dropping the Moab on that crazy man in North Korea, or thinking that the tribulation period is beginning, which ends in the rule of the Antichrist, you might want to think about the potential of the effects of a rug being pulled out from under the economy worldwide, a rug called quantitative easing and low interest rates, even if the intentions of this unelected board of economic regents, the so-called, the Federal Reserve, it's a council of unelected regents, even if they have the best of intentions. And there's some question as to whether they do have the best of intention. Is it time to pull the stimulus? Now, I was never for any kind of stimulus because I think ultimately it's just pushing. You get to a point where it doesn't solve the problems because what it does is it masks the problems. It's like giving the economy a drug which prevents us from determining what the symptoms are. So this is where we get these metaphors like the brain dead world economy on the Federal Reserve emergency room table on life support. My understanding is that inflation has never reached the 2% rate the Fed stated as its goal with stimulation. I've often done podcasts and I've said, the Fed is not worried about inflation. The Fed is really concerned about deflation, which they feel is runaway, and that once deflation starts, you can't stop it. Well, why is everyone concerned about deflation? Because of the balance sheets of all these central banks and because of the amount of debt that U.S. corporations have. They have an enormous amount of debt, and they all want inflation to crater those debts because if you bought the debt on $2008 dollars or $2012 dollars and you have inflation, then it cheapens what you paid. It reduces your debt bill because you can pay back in cheaper dollars. Unfortunately, it's hell on real economic growth, and this is one of the problems of the world economy in the present time frame, and I'm talking about the last 60 years or so. You know, several million people are still out of the workforce. I mean, tens of millions, and nothing has been done that really changes that. You don't see people really going back to work in droves. Certainly, sectors of business are doing better, and they're hiring, but most of the new jobs being created are IT-related, especially with the addition of robotics and autonomous software across the board. I've talked about that. You know, Amazon just bought Whole Foods. How long do you think it's going to be before they start bringing in autonomous software to replace people at Whole Foods? You know, Whole Foods does not have electronic checkout. I would imagine that they will at some point in the future. Things like that that we're seeing all over the economy that basically replace people with machinery, and it's actually preferable. You know, I would prefer to deal with an electronic checkout most of the time than an actual person. So then you get this question of 3% economic growth, GDP, which of course includes government spending. So if there was a large amount of government spending, then you're going to see improved GDP numbers. And it's good news, but is it dynamic growth beyond what the government is spending? So real growth really hasn't occurred for a long time. 1.5% growth is just not growth. So that's, let's just suppose that growth, real growth, could have been 4 or 5% during those periods of time on an average. So that's, you know, 50% more than what we have now that we don't have. So that's why analysts and economists and people in politics have been arguing about economic policy and no one pays any attention to it over the last 10 years. So what happens when the Federal Reserve starts tightening and eases out of stimulation as we speak in December? Some suggest that they will use North Korea or some other distraction. Isn't it interesting that the minutes of the most recent meeting were actually released the weekend of the supposed end of the world, and no one was talking about it because we were talking about the end of the world, we were talking about Trump's tweets, we were talking about North Korea, and so on. And yes, the Federal Reserve met the 20th of September. They announced that they will leave interest rates alone for the time being. By the way, they almost never increase rates in the fall, but they wait until the end of the fourth quarter in December to do it. But, and this is in caps, but will begin to wind down its historic steps to rescue the economy after the 2008 crisis, which involves mortgage-backed securities, buying treasuries. There has been a treasury boom, which has affected the stock market. There has been, a stock market boom. So if the Fed has been propping up the markets indirectly, and they have just announced that they're going to start pulling that stimulus, then what's going to happen with the markets? That's why we pay attention to this. And what about the potential for a really catastrophic change in the direction of the market and the start of a very powerful bull market, bear market, on the heels of this powerful bull market that we've had for the last 10 years? So it's definitely time to start paying attention to the things that really matter. And so you are prepped on that in podcast 665. So there's a lot of cool things going on at the Bob Davis Podcast. One of them is I'm working with a new company, and I'm pretty excited about it. If you are in business and you need payments cleared, listen up. If you're a developer and you develop websites for clients that do e-commerce, listen up. If you are doing business through your website, listen up. Regardless of what your payment problem is, ReliaFund can take care of it. ReliaFund is a payment processor. They've been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. So if you're developing an e-commerce website, they answer the phone and they deal with you. They deal with actual human beings. They want you to deal with actual human beings. ReliaFund has no long-term contracts. They're secure. They're technology-focused. You can reach them at 866-243-5040, 866-243-5040. Or check them out online at ReliaFund.com. You will soon see a ReliaFund button, which is an example of how payments can be cleared, because I will be able to clear payments through the BobDavisPodcast.com with ReliaFund. Or you can click on that banner at the top of the page, and it takes you to ReliaFund's contact page. They can really help you if you're in business, and I am looking forward to getting that button up. ReliaFund.com, R-E-L-I-A, ReliaFund.com. Okay, thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com. And for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast right off the page. I really appreciate the likes and shares of the videos I've done recently to promote the podcasts. And in spite of some of the crazy comments, I love it. So thank you for that. And also thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command. Yes, I'm looking into converting the Oxygen capability of Mobile Podcast Command, which is an old ambulance, for propane, to add a propane heater and a little stove and sink in there. And that will enable me to pretty much function, without having to go to restaurants and stuff like that. So when I'm on the road covering campaigns or stories, you know, it's just going to increase the survivability factor on the road. So thanks for those donations at thebobdavispodcast.com through PayPal. And thanks for listening to Podcast 665. Podcast 666 is coming up, and it's going to be special, so stay tuned. Thanks for listening.